Hi, this is Christopher O'Reilly, host of From the Top. Thank you for tuning into this week's podcast. While this podcast is free for all of you, it actually costs our little nonprofit some significant resources to purchase rights for all this fabulous music. Please consider making a small gift to From the Top and keep us broadcasting loud and clear. Go to fromthetop.org and click on Support.
It's NPR's From the Top, the showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country, celebrating 10 years on the air. Today, from New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, our lineup of outstanding performers includes an 11-year-old pianist from Oregon who says she's really shy. You be the judge. And a 17-year-old timpanist from here in Massachusetts will give us an enlightening introduction to the big copper drums. Here's our host, one of America's great concert pianists, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome back, everybody. It's great to be here in Jordan Hall with you again with another superb lineup of amazing young musicians. In addition to the kids Joanne just mentioned, we've got a 16-year-old cellist playing Popper, a 17-year-old baritone singing Vaughn Williams, and a 23-year-old violinist playing Gluck's Melody from Orpheus and Eurydice. Why a 23-year-old? Why somebody so old? So long in the tooth, so obviously over the hill. Well, because Maya Shankar is here to continue our celebration of 10 years on the air. She was with us as an extraordinary 12-year-old violinist in our pilot season, and now she's back with us as not only an incredible young musician, of course, but also as a Rhodes Scholar studying cognitive science at Oxford. But the story of those years in between is incredible, and we're going to talk to Maya in the second half of today's show. But now we're going to get right to some music from that cellist. Standing next to me is James Kim from nearby Natick, Massachusetts, studying at the Walnut Hill School. James, tell everybody what you and I are going to play.
We will be playing Fantasy on Little Russian Songs by David Popper.
Now, are these Little Russian songs or are these songs by Little Russians?
It's by David Popper.
Thank you.
James Kim, 16 years old, studying at the Walnut Hill School in Natick, Massachusetts.
Phenomenal playing there, James. And, you know, we've never had that piece on the show before, so thank you for that, too. 10 years, we've never had it. I'll never forget it. Congratulations also, James. In addition to being the recipient of one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Awards, you're one of two winners in the 2009 Boston Symphony Concerto competition. So really great stuff.
Thank you.
James, when we talked to you before the show, you said, as a young person, I can finally talk because I have listened. What did you mean by that, Grasshopper?
I think that as young people, the most important thing we can do is to listen to what's out there in the world, not just music, but everything in life. And then once we grow, we want to express that to the world. And so that's what we do as young people.
Do you listen to many different recordings? Do you get details, or do you just get the spirit of them?
Ever since I was young, I listened to just about everything. I listened to a lot of violinists. I listened to many pianists. Well, as far as cello goes, I knew everybody's sound. And I think I was fascinated that, you know, you line up 20 cellos here, and they play the same wooden box, but they make different sounds.
Very different.
And I think that as young people, to just realize that possibility is essential, I think.
It's very good. Well, I thought actually it would, given your, you know, expertise in the subject, it would be nice to hear a couple of the legendary cellists who you've learned from by listening so intently and have you tell us what you love about their sound and their playing. You mind doing that?
Sure.
Be great.
Sure.
This is the great Viennese cellist from the 1920s and 30s, Emanuel Feuermann. So what do you get from that, from Feuermann's sound? What are the main points?
His sound was like a ball of sound. It appeared so light, so brilliantly just light.
It has an essential core, but not a heaviness.
It was so light on the outside in appearance, but inside that ball of sound, you get this dark core. Metallic, this incredible power.
It's funny. It doesn't sound like he's using a bow on the string. It just sounds like the sound is emerging, like a voice, like a voice. It's amazing. So great that you listen to him, listen to these old great cellists. Let's hear another great cellist. This is a man you've actually taken a master class with, Janos Starker. So, I mean, there's fantastic virtuosity and such facility there. And what else do you take from Janos Starker's sound?
If you ever looked at him play the cello, you feel very, very healthy. It was not just great, it was very healthy, everything about it. You just look at him and your body feels better for some reason. You know? When he played a bow like this, he looked like he was swimming, you know, swimming like this.
There's a great economy of motion about his playing. Wasn't there something in the masterclass that you picked up from him? Something about the shifts going from one position to another?
And yes.
He says, what, there's only two kinds of shifts in the world?
There are two fundamental shifts, one is called a delayed shift. It sounds like this. And you get that shift by rotating your shoulder counterclockwise, so you feel like when you're young, you go down the slide like this.
Okay.
You have to feel that the fingerboard is like that. You have to slide, and it's a delayed shift because you hear that. You actually hear the goo. You hear the
motion between the notes.
You hear that, and the other shift is the anticipated shift. And it has that name because you anticipate the note so that it becomes clear. And it's generally a cleaner shift. Mm-hmm. And you get that by rotating your shoulder clockwise. So you go over the fingerboard and hit the note.
Wow. Because it looks almost like, you know, it looks like a finger shift. But as you say, you've made it a complete organic body movement with these mm-hmm. with these shoulder rotations. I think I could play the cello now. But, you know, I find it amazing, James, that, because obviously, you know, you soak up so much in your lessons and in your work and in your practicing and in your listening. And yet, would you say that, you know, in getting this popper together, were you saying, oh, well, I'm going to do this slide like Starker and I'm going to do this note like Foreman? Or is it the spirit or the letter of the listening that shapes your own performance?
When you listen to a recording, you don't try to imitate because you have your own confidence. I don't. That's great, but I want to be myself.
Exactly. Well, you are yourself, James. I've got to say, there's such integrity and such style and such personality in your playing, as well as great virtuosity. And it was such a pleasure playing with you. Thank you for starting us off so beautifully.
Thank you.
James Kim, everybody. James Kim, 16-year-old cellist from Natick, Massachusetts.
The Margaret Stuart Lindsay Arts Leadership Program at From the Top encourages young musicians to get out into their communities and make a positive difference in the world. Go to fromthetop.org to find tools to help you start your own arts leadership project. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Our second performer is an 11-year-old pianist from Lake Oswego, Oregon. Please welcome Adria Yee. Adria, you're going to be playing two of Felix Mendelssohn's Songs Without Words, and these come from sort of opposite ends of his life, I guess. Tell everybody what you're going to play.
I'm going to play the Opus 19, number 5, which is called Restlessness, and Opus 67, number 4, which is The Spinning Song or The Bee's Wedding.
Okay, stage is yours. Thank you.
Adria Yee, 11-year-old pianist from Lake Oswego, Oregon.
Adria, first of all, here's a teddy bear. Why am I handing you a teddy bear? Tell the story about your very first lesson.
Well, my mom was driving my brother back from his piano lesson, and I was little, so I had to go with them. But I was absolutely terrified of his piano teacher. But my mom decided on the way back that maybe I should try a lesson. So, I wasn't happy with this at all, but mom's the boss. So I followed her back, and I was completely freaked out when I first walked in. But the lesson really turned out to be not a lesson, but me play a line of music, me get teddy bear, mom and teacher talk for a while, I leave with teddy bear.
Sweet. It's a win-win situation. So did you get a teddy bear for every lesson, or did they...
Well, I thought so, so, if I get a teddy bear every lesson, why not? So.
Hoodwinked, obviously. Glad you stuck with it, though. It's really a good thing. Adria, when we talked to you before you came to Boston, you actually described yourself as shy and lazy, particularly when it comes to the non-piano parts of your life. I can't believe you were either, so I thought we should explore your self-description a little bit, find out just how shy and lazy you really are. Let's talk first about shy and your time this summer at theater camp. What was that like?
Well, the summer before last summer, I thought I might try acting, because I've always loved to act, but I've never officially acted. So I decided to try a theater camp. And so I got a few minor roles, and then I got cast as the customer in the Dead Parrot sketch from Monty Python.
Monty Python? Oh, my gosh. I love that one. You want to do a few lines?
Sure.
Okay. You play the customer, John Cleese character, and I'll be the Michael Palin pet shop owner. Go ahead, enter the shop.
Hello, I wish to register a complaint about this parrot, what I purchased not half an hour ago from this very boutique.
Yeah, that's the Norwegian blue. What's wrong with it?
I'll tell you what's wrong with it. It's dead. That's what's wrong with it.
No, it's just resting.
Look, my lad, I know a dead parrot when I see one, and I'm looking at one right now.
No, it's not dead. It's resting.
Resting?
Yeah, remarkable bird, the Norwegian blue. Beautiful plumage, ain't it?
The plumage don't enter into it. It's stone dead.
No, it's resting.
This parrot is no more. It has ceased to be. It's expired and gone to meet its maker. He's shuffled off his mortal coil, run down the curtain, and joined the bleeding choir invisible. This is an ex-parrot.
It was great. So much fun. Okay, yeah, you're so shy. Okay. All right, now let's talk about laziness. And there was a particular project at school.
Well, I'm a perfectionist. And my homework always takes forever, because every little stroke has to be just in the right place. And so I was in an advanced reading group, and we were supposed to do a project about the book we read. And at that time, I had a bunch of performances and a lot of things to do. So I was having trouble juggling it, but I really wanted to do this project, and I was really excited about it. And so my reading teacher came up to me, and she said, "Well, Adria, I know you're really busy right now, and I know you're a perfectionist. I don't want you doing this project." And I didn't like this. I wanted to do the project. And so she went to my homeroom teacher, and they talked for a bit. And so they agreed, yeah, we really don't want you doing this project. I still wanted to do it. I thought I might do it in secret, you know. But so I asked them if they forbid me to do it. And so they talked a little bit more, and they said, yeah, we forbid you to do it.
So you weren't trying to opt out of this project at all?
No.
Even with all the busyness that you had, all the things on your plate at that point, they had to actually forbid you and consult with other members of the faculty to get you banned from doing this project.
Yeah.
Okay, so lazy. Yeah. No. Beautiful playing, Adria. Great being with you. Thanks for being with us. Best of luck. Adria Yee, 11-year-old pianist from Lake Oswego, Oregon. From Mendelssohn's Songs Without Words to Songs with Words, and the young man to sing them has just joined me on stage. He's 17 years old, and his name is Sean Plum. Sean, tell everybody where you're from.
I am from Los Angeles.
And I guess as a rabid LA Lakers fan, you told me there was something you were dying to say to the very cultured Boston audience.
I wanted to say that your Celtics are awful. They're garbage. They're so bad. No. 2009 world champion Lakers.
Wow. So, Sean, you must be a Dodgers fan, too?
Well, I mean, I love the Dodgers, but I lived most of my life in the state of New York, so I love the Yankees, too. Who won the AL East. Red Sox are limping in.
Sean. Nothing like winning over the audience before you've even sung a note. You're a brave man. Before we have to dodge tomatoes, why don't you tell everybody what you're going to sing?
I'll be singing two of the 9 Songs of Travel by Rayfun Williams. It's a setting of poems originally written by Robert Louis Stevenson, and I'll be singing number 1 and number 9, The Vagabond, and I Have Trod the Upward and the Downward Slope.
The life I love, let the late go by me. Give the jolly heaven above and the byway nigh me. Bed in the bush with stars to see, bread I dip in the river. There's a life for a man like me. There's the life for soon or late, let what will be o'er me. Give the face of earth around and the world before me. Wealth I seek not, hope nor love, nor a friend who knows me. I seek the heaven above and the world. Trod the upward and the downward slope. I have endured and done in days before. I have longed for and bid farewell to hope.
Sean Plum, our 17-year-old baritone, singing Vaughan Williams.
Beautifully done. I love those songs.
Thank you very much.
Such a gorgeous voice. Now, Sean, we learned the hard way that you're a sports fan.
Yes.
But you're also a fan of English grammar. How so?
Well, I just moved to Los Angeles right before the freshman year of high school. And, you know, I thought I was a hotshot academically. So I start my freshman year at an all-boys Catholic college preparatory school. So, you know, I think I'm gonna be all right. So I turn in my first English paper. I feel confident about it. A couple of days later, I get it back. It's red, with all the marks wrong, everything I did wrong.
Oh,
it was
God.
Solid red. So in the process of trying to catch up, I guess I passed that and just became obsessed with it.
Gosh. Well, so what pet peeves, what grammatical mistakes bother you the most?
Well, I don't like correcting people, because I wouldn't want to be corrected. But my biggest pet peeve is when someone is correcting someone, but the person doing the correcting is wrong.
I know. That can be really bad.
Yeah.
Well, because of this interest of yours, I'm completely paralyzed because I'm worried I'm going to make grammatical errors. But I thought we could transform what would normally be, you know, our usual frivolous interview with a teenager into a valuable teaching moment. So this is what we're going to do. From now on, when I ask you a question, it's going to contain a grammatical error. I'd like you to identify the error and then answer the question. You okay with that?
Okay.
You ready? Actually, that was an incomplete sentence. You ready? I mean, lacking a verb. Sorry. Well, we're going to let that one slide, if you're okay with that.
Yeah, now I'm nervous, though.
Okay, good. Okay, first question. Sean, is it true that you used to sing to yourself in school and not quiet, under your breath, but loudly?
Well, you said quiet. You need an adverb. Quietly.
Oh, that's right. Not quiet. Quiet modifies the verb sing and therefore should be an adverb and not quietly. Okay? Everybody got that? So, but speaking of which, this random singing in class, was, you know, apparently it led to your becoming a singer.
Yeah, well, apparently I learned in second grade that it's not acceptable to sing out loud in class.
News but, to me.
So all my classmates were like, Sean, keep it down, you're always singing. But my second grade teacher, who I will never forget, Mrs. Feltham, she actually really liked it, and she took an interest in it, and she told me that when I was old enough that I should audition for the local opera company's winter production of A Mall and the Night Visitors to be a mall. So a couple years later, I auditioned, and I made it, and I did it for 2 years, and she came to every performance. So thank you, Mrs. Feltham.
Very proud. So since then, we should mention you've had, you know, a lot of success singing loudly and at recitals and competitions, including, most recently, winning the vocal category of the Los Angeles Spotlight Awards. Really, really big prize, that one. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Next question. Before singing one of those classical recitals, the type of music which you blare on your iPod is a little unusual. Tell everyone which music you prefer.
That's an error, right?
It's in there.
Did you say which instead of that?
Yes, as a matter of fact, before singing one of those classical recitals, the type of music that you blare on your... these typos. No, that was the embedded error. Very good. So you use which when the clause is expendable. I should have said the type of music that you blare on your iPod is a little unusual. So speaking of which, what kind of music do you blare on the iPod and why?
See, whenever I talk about this, my friends at school, I mean, they never give me the end of this of how I do this. but I listen to rap music, the farthest thing possible away from classical music, in my opinion, because the day of a competition or a day of a recital or a really cool radio show, I don't want to think about technique or worry about what I'm going to sing. So I just chose the farthest thing away, and so I listened to a lot of rap.
So what were you blaring backstage, by the way?
Dem Franchise Boys and Young Jeezy.
Nice. Nice one. I'm kind of with you on that. I mean, the venerable Vladimir Ashkenazi apparently on the day of a recital is never practicing the thing he's playing that day. He practices anything else but. So he's not quite listening to Public Enemy, but there's always hope. All right, one more question. Do you mind me asking what roles in opera you dream about singing in the future?
This is my favorite one. It's do you mind my asking?
Oh, I'm sorry. God, making friends, a lot. Yeah, thanks a lot. Yes, I should have said my asking. So, yes, do you mind my asking what roles in opera you dream about singing in the future?
Well, my dream role, hopefully, would be to be Don Giovanni. But my second favorite role is Escamillo and Carmen, because he gets to sing the Toreador song.
That's great. That's great stuff. I love Don Giovanni. That's my favorite of all the opera roles. So I'm going to look forward with bated breath to hearing you do that someday, Sean. And love doing the Vaughan Williams with you. Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Sean Plum, everybody. 17-year-old baritone from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, this is Joshua Bell. Coming up later in the program is a wonderful violinist and friend of mine, Maya Shankar. Maya returns as part of this program's 10th anniversary season, and I'd like to say happy anniversary to From the Top. I look forward to another decade of fantastic young musicians.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide at fordfoundation.org. From the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. From the Gruber Family Foundation to extend the breadth and depth of NPR's international coverage, and from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. This is NPR.
Welcome back to the radio showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country, From the Top. This week we're coming to you from New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. New England Conservatory, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Over the last 4 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded $1 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need, and we still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Today's program is made possible in part by the E. Nakamichi Foundation. Chris.
This year, we're celebrating our 10th anniversary by welcoming back young performers from our earliest broadcast seasons to learn where life has led them since they were on From the Top. Our next guest appeared as a violinist on a pilot episode when she was just 12 years old. She's now 23, and during those intervening years, well, brace yourself, because what she's accomplished is a little humbling to us mere mortals. Please welcome Maya Shankar. Maya, we're going to hear about your amazing accomplishments after we hear this piece that I'm so looking forward to doing with you. What's it going to be?
Chris and I are going to play The Melody by Gluck.
Thank you.
Maya Shankar playing Gluck's melody from Orpheus and Eurydice. Maya is our 10th anniversary performer for this show. Maya lives now in Oxford, England. Wow, that sounds great now, doesn't it? Maya, you sound like you've never put down your violin in all those 7 years, but actually that's not true. Tell us where you were in your playing at the age of 15 and what happened.
Well, I was studying with Itzhak Perlman, and I was at the Perlman Music Festival, and I was actually playing a Paganini caprice, and on one note, I sort of heard my finger kind of go, and there was a pop, and the pain didn't really go away for a very long time, and I visited a number of doctors, and finally they told me that I basically just had to stop playing completely,
wow.
Which was very difficult news to take. Yeah, absolutely.
I understand Maestro Perlman did not let up on teaching you.
Well, I was very fortunate to have two extremely supportive, wonderful teachers. Itzhak Perlman and Wan Bin Im worked on my bow arm with me for an entire year. So I was literally playing open strings in every lesson for an hour, and they would coach me on exactly how your wrist should move and all those details.
Well, that's paid off, obviously. That's nicely. But it must have been devastating, though, for you.
Yeah, it was definitely very difficult because music came to sort of define me in a lot of ways. And I think only upon losing it did I realize how entwined it was with my identity. Mm-hmm. And so I remember going to, I went to Yale for my undergrad, and I remember going to the extracurricular bazaar, and it was as though there was sort of a magnet near the Yale Orchestra chamber music section, and I was feeling this pull towards there, but
yeah.
I knew that could no longer be a part of my life, so I had to explore other options.
Well, so what were the other options? I mean, your academic side, the non-musical side took over. You went to Yale, and that turned out to be a good place for you? I mean, what did you end up studying there?
Yeah, I pursued cognitive science, so I worked in two research labs. I worked with monkeys in one lab, and then humans in the other lab. and I also was pretty involved in social justice pursuits.
But meanwhile, at the end of your time at Yale, your scientific work was honored by one of the most prestigious academic institutions in the world.
Yeah, I was the fortunate recipient of a Rhodes Scholarship.
Gosh.
So I'm in Oxford right now.
Incredible. And all this time, you're not playing the violin, not even touching it, not taking it out of the case?
Yeah, I mean, I opened it maybe twice in those 7 years, and then played for a little bit, realized that I was terrible, and put it right back in.
Oh, gosh. But here you are, violin in hand, and obviously in great shape. What happened? What brought you back?
Well, I got an invitation to attend the Academy of Achievement Conference in South Africa this past summer. And 2 weeks after accepting this invitation, I got a phone call, and they said, "You know, Maya, Joshua Bell is going to be attending the conference this summer. We'd love if you could play a duet with him." And I'm thinking, folks, you got the wrong Maya. This Maya doesn't play violin anymore. But I paused for a moment, and I think my sort of like youthful enthusiasm came out, and I said, yeah, of course. Yeah, totally. I'll definitely do that.
How could you pass that up? I mean, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a remarkable opportunity. I mean, for a comeback performance to be invited to play with one of the most renowned violinists in the world was just amazing. So I really couldn't say no.
So what's it been like getting back into music then?
Well, for one, I realized how much I hated practicing. You sort of, memory works in a very funny way. You kind of only remember those glossy, wonderful, you know, euphoric moments like when you're on stage and you forget what it feels like to practice scales
and
etudes and stuff.
Yes.
But actually, I have to, the biggest challenge, I think, is exercising control in my practice sessions because I'm only allowed to play for 15 minutes a day right now, and I'm slowly building up, and so I've now been playing my instrument maybe for 3 months, and it's 15 minutes a day, sometimes 0 minutes a day, depending on how I'm feeling. But it's been so wonderful experiencing the musical world again and performing with you on stage. I mean, From the Top was such a formative part of my musical career.
Very, very proud of you. By the way, we've made a very cool video with Maya on this whole subject of once a musician, always a musician. It's on our website at fromthetop.org. So, Maya, what do you think the future holds? Research scientist or professional classical musician or both?
It's a good question. Well, actually, I thought there was the perfect opening. There was a perfect career option. And then Fox goes and picks Ellen DeGeneres to be the next American Idol judge. I was a front runner. I just want to make that clear.
Good for you. Keep
anyway,
it up.
Anyway, I'm back to the drawing board. I don't know. Now I'm that sure, you know, my hopes have been let
I'm
down.
I'm sure you'll persevere. And again, we're so proud of you. We applaud everything
Thanks
you
a
do.
Lot, Chris. It was
Great
a pleasure
with
playing
you
with you.
Thanks, Maya. Maya Shankar, our 10th anniversary performer, living now in Oxford, England.
And now it's time for another episode of Timpani with Ted. Ted's lesson today, drums can play the melody too.
A J. Arthur Rank production. Thank you, Joanne. Yes, it's time to introduce 17-year-old percussionist Ted Babcock from Wenham, Massachusetts. Ted, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
You're about to play a piece on solo timpani written by an American composer who's known for some very difficult music. Tell us who the composer is and introduce the piece, won't you?
This is one of the solo pieces for timpani by Elliot Carter. It's from the 8 pieces for timpani, and it's number 8, the march.
Now, this was a very silly setup for a very cool demonstration we've asked you to give to help introduce this Elliot Carter work. As Joanne said, you're going to show us not only how the drums can play melody, but also how, for this piece, and I'm kind of amazed by this, the way in which you can actually discern different layers, different voices within this piece. So is it kind of like how you use the sticks that we're able to discern the counterpoint, the different voices? Explain that.
Well, one of the things that's very specific to this piece is out of the 8 is that Carter does this very clever thing where he uses both the back end or the butt end of the stick as well as the felt end or the head of the stick.
So play us the stick tail line first.
Sure.
And then the felt end line. And now together. Wow. We'll look forward to your recording of Bach's Art of the Fugue on solo timpani.
Thank you. Yes.
Sometime in a theater near you. Nicely done, Ted. Okay, let's hear this movement from Elliot Carter's 8 pieces for timpani. It's a really unusual and fun way to end our show. I want to thank all of our great young performers today, and thank you for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, March from 8 Pieces for Timpani by Elliot Carter, played by Ted Babcock.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley for Tom Vagley Productions, with Tim Banker for From the Top. Musical direction by Tom Vinieri with Caroline Cardias-Menos. Our tour producer is David Balsam. Our production manager is Elizabeth DeVore, with lighting by Tori Sweetser. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette, with Francis X. Coakley, David Forbes, and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partner is New England Conservatory in Boston. The Margaret Stuart Lindsay Arts Leadership Program at From the Top encourages young musicians to get out into their communities and make a positive difference in the world. Go to our website to find tools to help you start your own arts leadership project or to download an application to appear in our program. Visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. From the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day, at wallacefoundation.org. And from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org. This is NPR.